Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 18th of September 2018. I'm your host, Real Gerald Quinn, discussing the world of sports and pop culture. No call number, I'm Bet. Aha. Double duty tonight, Facebook Live, and also my YouTube live, my YouTube page, streaming YouTube, excuse me. That's what happens when you away from it for like, you know, a week, or I think it's been longer than that, eight days. Well, I've been away for too long, so I'm back, double duty. A lot to talk about as we head towards seemingly another Thursday night game, which actually, you know, should be decent. Jets and Browns, not awful. You get to see a talented young quarterback in Sam Darnold came back down to earth. I still think he has a lot of ability, and I definitely would have taken him if I were the New York Giants, but that's just me. And the Cleveland Browns, who have, to me, and we'll talk about the Browns later on, have a playoff caliber roster. The problem is the coaching. So that never helps, having coaches that haven't won a game since 2016. But they have a roster, though. They have some talent. A lot of talent on that Cleveland team. We're going to begin, though, with the biggest event of the weekend, I felt, in my opinion. Triple G and Canelo, which kind of went as expected. And I'm going to tell you why. A lot of people thought Canelo was going to win this fight. I was not one of those people. I thought Triple G would win the fight. I thought he did win the fight. I thought he won the first fight. But there were a lot of people who were picking Canelo, you know, picking him based on the fact that he would come out more aggressive. He did. Also, popularity, that was a fact. That certainly was a factor. Canelo is the younger fighter. He is a more bankable fighter. He is a fighter that if you're HBO, Showtime, or any other network, that you would want to put your money behind because, you know, younger, more popular, style, and let's be honest, Canelo, from an athletic standpoint, he looks the par of a world champion. But I'm telling you right now, Triple G is a nightmare matchup for Canelo. The way I scored the fight, and this is the first time I've ever done this in my life, in watching any boxing match I've ever watched. Hundreds that I've watched over my lifetime. I actually scored the fight. Round by round, I actually scored the fight. So, the first six rounds, I thought were, you could have either went Triple G, four rounds of two. Canelo, you could have went four rounds of two. But basically, I had them three rounds apiece, the first four rounds. The first six rounds. From the seventh round on, the last six rounds, I had Triple G winning five of the six rounds. And in essence, to me, dominating the fight. I kept hearing about, well, Canelo is dictating pace. He's dictating this. He's dictating that. Triple G was using Canelo, was jabbing Canelo to a point to where he had a cut on his eye, a slice cut right here over his eye. And I want to, you know, let everybody in on this secret. Those punches count. Like, it's not so much with, of course, the ideal situation is to knock a guy out. And both of them, at one point in the match, I believe the eighth and ninth round, were going for the knockout, in particular Canelo. Canelo got desperate, especially the ninth and tenth round. He got desperate because he felt like he was losing. He was clearly going for the knockout. But Triple G hit Canelo with so many jabs that, again, I don't see how you can disregard those all the jabbing that Triple G was doing. And I will say this. There was a point in the fight, and it came between the 10th and 11th round, where I'm saying to myself, how is Canelo still standing? That's what Triple G was doing to him. Triple G took control of the fight in the 7th round. He took control after his trainer, Abel Sanchez, basically told him, "You are losing. You're going to lose at this rate." And something clicked. He found a second win or a third win And I thought Canelo, the first six rounds, absolutely dictated the fight as far as being a more aggressive fighter. He was working the body. And I thought that those body punches from Triple G, excuse me, from Canelo, would end up catching up with Triple G at his age, and also just the wear and tear that body punches do to a fighter. See, many guys get knocked out late in the fight or get TKO'd behind body punches that occurred in rounds, you know, 1 through 6 or 1 through 5. Bernard Hopkins was a master of that. He would set guys up. And before you know it, a guy would just fall in the 7th or 8th round because he just destroyed his body. I thought that was a possibility for Triple G, for Canelo in that fight, that he could just physically wear down Triple G. Again, he's younger, he's more physically gifted, more athletic. That was not the case. Triple G, again, found a second, third win. And Triple G looked like the younger fighter in the last 6 rounds. He really did. Yeah, Canelo, now both guys were done in the 12th round. They physically were spent, especially the last 90 seconds, the last minute and a half of the 12th round. Both guys were done. But in the 7th through 11th rounds, Triple G looked like the younger fighter. Now, the decision, I had a major problem. I probably had more of a problem with this decision than I did the first fight. The first fight, I could see as a draw. I could see that fight as being called a draw. Even though I thought Triple G won the fight, I can understand why it could be a draw. This fight, there's no way that Canelo won that fight. There's no way that he won that fight. Now, a lot of boxers, a lot of experts, a lot of people are holding the fact that Triple G wasn't as aggressive as he normally is. I didn't see it. I just didn't see it. Even when, you know, Canelo was dictating the pace in the first 6 rounds, Triple G was still landing power shots. He was still landing jabs, and he was still landing. And a lot of people didn't want to talk about this. Triple G landed a number of left hooks. Those punches hurt. And those punches count. Again, I thought Canelo was going down in the 11th round. I really did. I thought he was going down in that 11th round. But again, I'm not surprised by a decision. I honestly felt like Triple G had to either knock Canelo out or just dominated to a point to where it wasn't even in question. That was not the case. The fight was closer than that. It was still a relatively close fight. But I thought that if I had to score in terms of rounds, I would have gave Triple G, I would have had it 7-5, realistically. I didn't have Canelo. There's no way to me that you could have Canelo winning more than 5 rounds. There's no way. And moving forward, if I'm Canelo, I want no part of Triple G. No part. You have nothing to gain at this point. Triple G, sure, Triple G would like another shot at Canelo. He's 8 years older. Doesn't have that many big fights left in him. And whether or not we believe he won the fight or not, I believe he won the fight in the record books. It goes on his record as a loss. So sure, he wants to redeem himself. Why not? He has nothing else to lose at this point. If you're Canelo, nah, I gotta go back to I gotta go back to Rocky 2. Remember when Tony told Apollo, "We don't need this. We don't need this man," because he wouldn't stop coming. And this is after Apollo won the fight. After he won the fight, the first fight, Rocky just wouldn't go down. Tony warned him. Listen to your trainer. Tony warned Apollo, "We don't need this. He said, I've never seen a man get beat like this before. We don't need this, champ. Let's move on to other contenders." But Apollo just, you know, couldn't. You know, it was that he had to scratch that itch again and end up losing and getting knocked out in part 2. So if I'm Canelo's peoples, I want no part of Triple G. Because it's just a bad, matchup. You know, say we're into, for my tennis fans, compared to this, Roger Federer is a better tennis player than Rafael Nadal, more talented all around. But the reason why Nadal owns a 23-15 edge over Federer because it's a bad matchup in terms of style of play. It's a bad matchup. That's how it is in sports sometimes, especially individual sports. Some matchups just don't, you know, are just not in your favor. Again, I feel like Canelo is a better fighter per se athletically. Physically, he looks the part of a champion in terms of physique. You know, the swag, how he carries himself. He looks, he's a bankable fighter. Triple G, quiet, kind of has that quiet assassin, you know, soft-spoken. Both of them class individual. And again, Triple G and his manager handled that loss better than I did, better than I would have handled it myself. I thought Triple G won the fight. But we'll see what happens in the future. We'll see if we get a third one. Again, I'm Canelo. I want no part of Triple G for a third fight. Because to me, they fought twice, and I believe that Triple G has won both fights. So Floyd Mayweather tried to steal some thunder of the fight by announcing that there will be a second Floyd Manny Pacquiao fight in December. And I'll tell you this, they got me once. They got me once. I bought it, $100. They will not. Nah. They won't get me again. The first fight was terrible. Was a terrible fight to watch. And that was 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, May of 2015. One of the great sports days of all time. Somebody should do a book about that sports day, May 2nd, 2015. You had the Pacquiao Mayweather fight, Game 7, Spurs Clippers, when the Clippers actually mattered. Kentucky Derby. Remember, play. That was a historic sports day for just a single day. That should be documented one of these days in a book. But anyway, no one wants to see that fight. To me, two guys, legendary fighters, iconic fighters, but the bottom line is they're 3 years older. I will watch the fight, even, and I'm, you know, not going to pay for it, but I'll watch the fight, but I don't have much interest at all in that fight. I understand Pacquiao from a money standpoint, why you want that fight. If you're Floyd Mayweather, to me, you have nothing to gain, put money aside. And everything to lose as far as your legacy. Can you imagine Floyd lost that fight to to Pacquiao and guys, which would ruin his perfect record? Is that who you really want? I mean, again, Pacquiao is a classic Hall of Fame fighter, all time great. I don't want to get my record possibly spoiled by an aging, over-the-hill guy, fighter in Manny Pacquiao. I'm just sorry. Or a guy who I personally, and Floyd doesn't like Pacquiao. There's no love lost between them. I mean, it's one thing to lose to an up-and-coming superstar. You know, if Floyd and Canelo fought again, and Floyd lost to Canelo, understandable. Canelo, you know, more seasoned now. I know he destroyed him the first time, but Canelo, more seasoned now. Floyd, what, 40, 41 years old? It would actually make sense. And you're losing again. Canelo and Triple G, and getting back to that fight, those guys are both all-time greats. And Canelo's entered that, he's beaten everybody except Floyd. So he's starting to enter that, you know, now the generational good. We'll start to look at Canelo and start to look at Triple G as two of the greats of all time in general, period. But it would be understandable if Floyd lost to Canelo at this stage in his career. That would be a loss that I could accept more if I'm Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. But again, Floyd is the money man, most bankable fighter in the history of the sport. That gate will be $100 million plus. No question about it. And again, they'll charge $100 pay-per-view, and all types of records will be set or broken. But because that's what Floyd Mayweather, he is the most bankable athlete in terms of people watching in the world right now. Week 2 in the NFL is in the books. You saw last night the Bears get by Seattle 31-24. The Bears have a legit top defense at all levels, to be honest with you. The secondary is probably their weakest, but they're not terrible in the secondary. I like Kyle Fuller and Eddie Jackson. I know Amukamara is okay. I know he had to pick six, but he's bounced around. Was with the Giants. Decent cornerback. But Khalil Mack has been just dominant these first two games. That Bear defense is legit. That will keep the Bear defense are gonna have their way with bad quarterbacks. Now, they played the best in Aaron Rodgers, should have beat them, and played a franchise guy in Russell Wilson and took the Seattle offensive line apart. I know they shored up their protection in the second half, but Russell Wilson in the first half was running for his life. And the question about the Bears again is Trubisky. Now, he had two picks. One of the picks wasn't his fault. Made some nice plays. We know he could run. But still, he will be the difference between them going to the next level, possibly contending for a playoff spot. The defense is set. We know that. Their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games, maybe win them a couple games. But Trubisky is going to be, his learning curve will determine their season. I don't think he's quite there yet. I see, I see some nice things, but I think that he's a couple years away, at least a year, maybe 2 years away from possibly being a factor. I haven't seen enough to say that he's going to be a franchise quarterback. If you made me choose right now, I'd lean towards saying no. But the Bears should have a competitive season. That's a tough division that they're in. Really no weak spots in that division. Even Detroit is not a bad team. I know they're 0-2, but Detroit still can, still have Stafford. They still have to, they still can hurt you with some weapons that they have. But that's a tough division to be in with Minnesota and Green Bay, which is, again, perfect segue to the second straight week of having a tie. That's a bad tie if you're the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers being tied at home. Minnesota, sure, of course, Minnesota wanted to win the game. They cut their kicker, and that's right, and they should have cut him. Also, Cleveland cut their kicker, and they should have cut him as well, as he cost them a game against the Saints. But, if you're Minnesota, at least you did come back from 20-7, and you also, the game was also at Lambeau Field. So now, yes, you didn't get the loss. You came back, and you're going to see Green Bay probably late in the season. I would say in December that they'll play. I don't know Minnesota's schedule, but I would say normally those divisional games, those rival divisional games are in December, especially against teams of that caliber. You're going to see them in Minnesota. And the thing that stood out about that game was Kirk Cousins. There will always be a connection. The two will always be, joined at their hip, with Kirk Cousins and the Washington football franchise. And I could not help watching Kirk Cousins and saying, told you. I told you. To all the people, especially Washington football fans, who can constantly knock this guy, constantly say that he doesn't have this, he can't do that, he can't do this. And look at Kirk Cousins. He brings the team back on the road against Aaron Rodgers, outplays Aaron Rodgers. And with that team, with that defense, with that running game, they can win a championship with Kirk Cousins under center. That's all there is to it. I think the Rams are the best team in football right now. Minnesota is right there. Right, they are right there. 1-1A. Cousins, again, had one interception. Should have had a second one. The Clay Matthews hit. Late hit was a ridiculous call. The first one against Chicago last week was legit. This one was just made no sense whatsoever, in terms of it being called a penalty. I understand you have to protect the quarterback, but at some point your official, you gotta use common sense as well. And the NFL needs to use common sense when it comes to some of those calls with the late hits. I can understand all two automatics with the late hits as far as quarterback. You cannot go low and nothing close to the head. Anything else, to me, is judgmental. So this whole idea of falling on a guy or picking a guy up and slamming him, I didn't see it. They claimed that he picked him up and drove him into the ground. I didn't see it. Didn't see it at all. I thought it was an awful call that, in essence, you know, might cost the Packers the game. But if you're Minnesota, that is a tie that you don't mind. You don't want a tie, but that is a tie that you can live with that tie. Green Bay, that's a tough pill to swallow. At home against a team that you're going to have to go through probably in the playoffs through a division to get to a Super Bowl. You're going to have to see them either through the division or in the playoffs at some point to get to where you need to get to where you want to be at. The two main stories in the NFL right now through 2 weeks. We have to proceed with caution. It's only two seasons, only 2 weeks old. Patrick Mahomes and the St. Louis Rams. So Patrick Mahomes showing you why Andy Reid and Kansas City did not hesitate to part ways with Alex Smith and giving you a glimpse of the future. Now, I'm not crowning this guy the second coming of Peyton Manning after two games. I'm not. But the throws he makes, we know he has a big arm. We understand that his back shoulder, he can make great back shoulder throws. He's poised. And right, you know, and we know Andy Reid is a great quarterback coach and developer of quarterbacks. The offensive line is solid. They have skilled players, Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, guys on the outside. Kelsey's a top tight end, maybe the second best tight end after behind Gronkowski. So it is a perfect setup, an ideal setup for a young quarterback. Sat a year on the bench behind a very good a veteran player, a very good veteran, Alex Smith, a perfect ideal setup for a young player. And if you had your ideal setup for a young quarterback coming in, solid offensive line, a coach that knows what he's doing, skilled players, and sitting a year under a veteran quarterback who knows who can play. That would be an ideal, perfect setup for a quarterback coming in. But, you know, very few of those situations exist in the NFL more times than not. That was a unique situation. But Kansas City is going to score a lot of points. You get the sense that, well, last year they got off to a fast start, but I never completely could take it seriously because of the limitations of Alex Smith. Never completely could take it seriously. This guy, to me, you can do more things just based on his just physical ability. Now, again, I'm not crowning him the next big-time player. There's no way after two games that you can make that proclamation. It's just impossible after two games. But you have to love what you know, the numbers are what they are. The guy has 10 touchdowns in two games. So the numbers speak for themselves. The quality of wins speak for themselves. San Diego, I think, is one of the more talented rosters in the AFC. And Pittsburgh is a disaster right now. But coming into the offseason, coming into the season, Pittsburgh was one of the two or three teams that people picked to get to the Super Bowl, some even to win the Super Bowl out of the AFC. So you have to like what you've seen out of Mahomes. But again, over the course of a season, these defensive coordinators get paid as well. They're gonna adjust to whatever weaknesses that he possesses, or they'll find the holes in his game, You know, it's kinda like baseball. Hitter comes up out of minor leagues, he gets hot, scouted, you know, they have advanced scouts. They adjust to the hitter. Can that hitter, then the hitter has to counter adjust, and it becomes a game of adjust versus adjust versus adjust. And, you know, we'll see who comes out on top. And you know, we've seen sometimes in baseball, sometimes where guys, once the defense or once other teams make that first adjustment to what you can and cannot do, guys have trouble. They're going to find, again, these are paid professionals in terms of these defensive coordinators live in the film room. They will find what Patrick Mahomes cannot do or doesn't do well. They'll find it. It might take him a month. It might take him half the season, but they will find those holes in his game, and he will have to make an adjustment to that, to their adjustment. But again, cannot ask for a better start, a better ideal situation for a young quarterback who clearly has ability. I mean, the guy, this is not a product of system. This guy clearly has ability, clearly has a lot of physical talent, clearly can make throws and could do things physically that Alex Smith could not do. So that goes without saying. Right now, for my YouTube audience, experiencing a little bit of some issues here, but we're still live here with Facebook. Now we're back with YouTube. After a couple seconds of a little technical issues, but we're back here. But Kansas City off to a fast start. You have Pittsburgh off to a slow start. Pittsburgh, 0-1-1. Pittsburgh has a lot of internal issues right now with that football team. Not in from Le'Veon Bell to Antonio Brown. The defense can't tackle anybody and can't cover anybody, especially going down the field. So we'll see again. I wouldn't panic from a Pittsburgh fan. A little bit concerned, would not panic. Le'Veon Bell hasn't even been the story as far as missing him on the field. It's been, defensively, Pittsburgh has been horrible. I mean, Pittsburgh's defense, they're back in. They're not getting to the quarterback the way they were last year. Last year, Pittsburgh was a legit top 10, maybe even top 5 in terms of sacks. Again, their secondary, they're back in, which I thought that they had shored up last season, is struggling, especially with the deep ball. So I think, Tomlin will figure it out. They have way too much talent, to just completely fall off the wagon. And plus the AFC, again, the AFC is just not that deep. Like in NFC, you can't afford to fall behind. There are too many teams. That's not the case. That is not the case in the AFC. Could we be fake? Could we be in the midst of a changing of the guard? Maybe. Jacksonville kind of sent the early message with their performance against New England. Blake Bortles could not play any better if at gunpoint. He was the best player on the field, combined for over 400 yards, outplayed Tom Brady wasn't even close. It's not like Brady played bad, played poorly, but Bortles was all over the place. Nice win for Jacksonville, considering what happened last January, and it seemed like they put an overemphasis on being aggressive. Sometimes, too, a little bit, they got a little overly aggressive at times, but the message was sent. That's a big game, even though it was only in September, because from a home field advantage standpoint, you do not want to travel to Foxborough. I don't care if it was warm. It was warm last January in Foxborough, but you want New England in your building, even though we know New England can win anywhere, but you want to make them travel on the road. Some of their playoff losses where they haven't made the Super Bowl, whether it be at Denver or somebody else that they lost to recently on the road, I can't think of right now. I remember the Denver one a couple of years ago. Will come to mind, but they, you want them on the road. You want them in your building. So especially for a team that's up and coming, that has a lot of talent on defense, Lots on defense. A nice win for Jacksonville. As far as the Rams go, there's not a more complete team in football right now. The Rams have everything. Again, it comes down to a matter of Jared Goff, playoffs, making a play or making a couple plays. And we know Goff has talent, but at some point, if the Rams want to get to the Super Bowl, Jared Goff will have to make a play in the playoffs. Where, you know, I wouldn't even worry about the home field if I were the Rams. Their defense travels. They have a running game that could travel. They can win anywhere. And plus, they don't have the greatest home field that there is with that, you know, with the stadium, you know, at all, you know, anyway. So I don't think home field, if the Rams get a first round bye, I think that's all you care about if you're a Rams, getting a first round bye. I don't think they have to have outright home field advantage to get to the Super Bowl, but they have it all through the first two games. They've dominated some pretty, you know, listen, the Raiders. I don't think the Raiders are 0-2. The Raiders aren't the bad team. They might be poorly coached. They're not a bad team. So that was a nice win on the road opening weekend for the Rams. And again, this past game, they just completely had their way. And again, right now, the Rams are clearly the most complete team in football through the course of the first 2 weeks. Have not been impressed with the Saints at all. They could have easily lost to the Browns. Again, the Browns have a lot of talent, a lot of physical talent, especially on the defensive end of the field. I think the losing Gordon will be addition by subtraction. And again, no classic Patriots. The Patriots don't even need Josh Gordon to me. The Patriot issues are defensive. That defense has been lit up by, I mean, made Blake Bortles look like Joe Montana out there. They got lit up by Blake Bortles. So to me, the issues that New England has is a lack of a pass rush, and they are terrible. I mean, awful in the back end. They are awful in the back end. Their back end, that secondary is one of the, at the bottom half of the league right now, as far as maybe one of the 5 or 10 worst secondaries in football right now, without question. So Bill Belichick is going to have his hands full trying to fix that. We know that he is Bill Belichick, but that defense strikes no fear into anybody right now with the way Jacksonville went up and down the field. I mean, Jacksonville had about 400, almost 500 yards of offense, and Leonard Fournette didn't even play in the game. So again, Cleveland to me has a playoff caliber roster. They should be in the Saints. The Saints through the first 2 weeks have not been impressive at all. Now, maybe the Tampa Bay game doesn't look as bad considering what Tampa Bay did to Philly. That was an impressive win for Tampa Bay. And now, you know, Philly will get their quarterback back. Ryan Fitzpatrick, again, listen, if you're Ryan Fitzpatrick, you are playing with house money at this point. You know you could be a backup for as long as you physically can able to play. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick could be a 40-year-old backup. You know, as a backup, that you're always going to have a place, find a place in this league. You're always going to have a place in this league as a backup quarterback. So right now, he is out there just living his best life and living the dream right now. And he has absolutely nothing to lose. He has nothing to lose right now, to be honest with you. Again, he's a guy, veteran guy, who is a fringe starter, capable, you know, again, a upper echelon backup player. Now, again, I don't see a quarterback controversy. I feel like Jameis Winston, you either play Jameis Winston or what's the point of him even being on a team? So I'm not one who's going to keep playing Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick will show you why he's a backup quarterback before Jameis Winston gets back. I promise you. There's a reason why Ryan Fitzpatrick has been for the most part a guy that's bounced around and for the most part has been a backup quarterback. There's a reason for that, and those true colors will come out. But right now, again, back-to-back 400-yard games, two excellent, great wins, not good wins, two great wins against teams that are considered Super Bowl contenders, Philadelphia and New Orleans, at worst playoff contenders if you don't want to consider New Orleans a Super Bowl contender. They are definitely somebody that's a division and a playoff contender. So, Ryan Fitzpatrick is just out here living his best life, you know, and living the dream. And why not? Have nothing to lose, everything to gain. Come on, and of course, you heard of the Josh Gordon trade. Again, everything, nothing to lose if you're New England. A guy, listen, New England will cut a player with a snap of a finger. So Josh Gordon has no choice but to keep his nose clean. If Josh Gordon focus and Josh Gordon on the field is one of the top three receivers in the league physically, maybe the most physically gifted receiver in football, even more so than Julio Jones or even Odell Beckham Jr. Has better hands than Odell Beckham Jr. But again, as we've seen over the course of his duration of his career, is can Josh Gordon stay on the field? That's the question. If he can stay on the field, I think he'll be productive. I really do. I don't think New England would just take a flyer on him to, like, New England. Listen, the thing I understand about New England, New England is about culture. They're about culture, and they're also about their system. If they don't believe that you can fit in their system, they'll get a less talented guy who is a better fit for their system. They've shown that with how many no-name guys that they've had plugged in offensively and defensively over the course of the Bill Belichick, Tom Brady era. So it's not about name recognition. Of course, they've taken an occasional shot on a name. Randy Moss worked out. Chad Ochocinco did not work out. But for the most part, New England's about culture and they're about their system. So clearly they feel like Josh Gordon can fit. Clearly they feel like he's going to be on his best behavior because this is probably more than likely going to be his last chance before he's out the league if he doesn't keep his nose clean. And, well, you know, again, he's making $780,000, making hardly no money. And it is a high-reward, low-risk deal for the Patriots. But, again, that, to me, the offensively is not their issues. I think they'll be fine offensively. It is their defense that is the concern for that franchise right now. And it's been going back. It didn't just start this year. It's been going back to last year, to the Super Bowl, the playoffs last year. That defense is not the same defense that it was in the when they were winning championships, competing for championships. And at a certain point, that defense is going to have to stand up and be, I'm not saying a top 10 defense, but be a middle of the pack, competent defense to where, you know, you can get an occasional stop. Right now, they can't stop anyone. Again, the Jacksonville offense, I understand they have some great red zone numbers in the past couple of games, but the Jacksonville offense is really not a complicated offense to stop with the receivers that they have, and again, with no Leonard Fournette. So we'll see what New England does with Josh Gordon. Again, I have no problem with the move. They have no problem with Cleveland letting Josh Gordon go. At a certain point, you gotta cut the cord. There were rumors that he was possibly under the influence, and we don't know that to be true. So I want to say alleged, put the emphasis on alleged, that he, you know, there were some reports that he wasn't himself when he reported to the facility. He injures his hamstring or tweaks his hamstring in a promotional shoot, and Cleveland basically says, you know what, deuces. Speaking of deuces, how about your man Vontae Davis? That might be the first halftime retirement in sports. Somebody needs to check that. Because I feel like I haven't seen anyone, let alone the NFL, walk off the field, retire at halftime in any of the four major sports at halftime. We've seen players leave after a game, a couple games, a couple weeks, a season, but not, I mean, I shouldn't say, of course, a season, a couple months, but not after, not at halftime. All I can say is, I don't believe in quit. In, you know, I don't believe in quitting or quitters, but that is a toxic, to say at least, culture and situation when you got dudes who say, you know what, I'm out. Like, you see, like, it's like, I'm not gonna put my body through this. I'm good. Y'all can keep this money. Like, he's walking away from money. This is not the NBA where the contract is guaranteed. And you get, he's walking away from you know, a little piece of change. I don't think he's making a lot because, again, he's a, you know, not the player that he once was. But the Bills don't get that money towards the salary cap that he's walking away from. But again, I love the Lorenzo Alexander line was classic. I've seen it in high school, middle, Pop Warner. I've never seen it in my life, something like that. And that's the type of stuff. You can't even show your face ever in an NFL stadium, ever. Like, you like Vontae Davis, you have to just stay away from the NFL. Any NFL facility, is like, you can't. Tailgating, you have to just stay away from anything that's connected to the NFL that might have players in the same vicinity. Like, you have to basically disappear after something like that. You can't show your face anywhere. Forget about the Super Bowl, Pro Bowl parties, promotional shit. I don't care if it's the United Way. You cannot show your face after something like that. You better not show your face for at least a year, a calendar year. Not an NFL season, a calendar year after something like that. I don't know how you explain that one to anyone, especially your peers. Like, I didn't find no player, I didn't hear any reaction, any player that had any respect for that. Because normally players in all sports protect other players. You're like, well, you know, his situation, you never know who he was dealing with, and there was none of that after this. There was none of that whatsoever. Forget about the Bills locker room. I'm just talking about around the league. Like, no one, I didn't hear anyone try to, like, rationalize or try to, like, make sense of that. Couple of NBA things I wanted to get to, and I'm going to touch on Florida State. I don't want to, but I got to give you a little college. So Jimmy Butler, well, first of all, he's not even worthy of being the first. Let's go in order here. Let's go with the Hall of Famers first, or future Hall of Famers world. Somebody who's actually won something to begin with as far as the NBA goes. Dwayne Wade is going to retire after this year. Year 16 for him. So LeBron's going to be the last one remaining of that 03. Well, no, he's not. Carmelo. Yeah, Carmelo Anthony is still in the league. If you were wondering, Carmelo Anthony is still in the league. But Bosh, you know, with the medical, the blood clots, he's out. That class of 2003 is basically David West just retired. So basically it's LeBron, Wade, and Carmelo Anthony. Well, left out of that famous class 2003 NBA class. So Wade is gone after this year, and you know, if you're Dwayne Wade, you're not. Here's one thing: you are not getting the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Kobe Bryant, Julius Erving farewell. It's just not. It's not going to happen. I love Dwayne Wade's game over the course of his career. He's a Hall of, without forget about Hall of Famer. Dwayne Wade is probably top 25, top 30, top 4 two guards of all time. I only would only put Jordan, Kobe, and Jerry West ahead of him. So probably the 4th best two guards of all time, which is saying a lot. There have been a lot of great, great two guards. I mean, I'm putting them over George Gervin. And the likes of Allen Iverson himself, and some great players over the course of course of his career. I just think, dude, you just should have walked out quietly, man, after this year. Like, he averaged, Dwayne Wade over the last 2 years has basically averaged 11 points a game. You know, he struggles to stay healthy. You know, Kobe Bryant went out. We knew Kobe was done physically. Basically went out playing on one leg with the Achilles, the knee. We understood that. But it's Kobe Bryant. It's 20 years, five chips. He's an iconic figure. But Dwayne Wade, just trying to figure out. You're not getting that farewell tour, man. I mean, you're going to get I guess he deserves to go out somewhat on his own terms, but does he really want to go out like this as a player on a team that is middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, who won't be a major factor playing at this level? Do you really want to go out like this? So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. But again, Dwayne Wade's a Hall of Famer. He was a great player. Was a guy who had a classic NBA Finals performance back in 2006. Something that no basketball fan will ever forget. Now, going from the sublime to the ridiculous, Jimmy Butler of the Minnesota Timberwolves, at least for now, because he could be moved possibly. I don't think before the season. I think if they're going to move him, it's going to be at the trade deadline. But Jimmy Butler basically called for a meeting with the Minnesota Timberwolves, or they basically met. I believe they were going to meet today. And I'm all for player empowerment. I love the fact that NBA players have more power probably than any other professional sports league as far as the players goes. I love it. I absolutely love it. But this is when player power can go wrong, when you have guys who flex their muscle but are not on that level as far as ability. Case in point, Dwayne Casey being fired because of DeMar DeRozan. So Toronto choosing Casey over DeRozan. And this is before the Kawhi Leonard was even on the table. Toronto did not anticipate that Kawhi Leonard would be available. So keep that in mind. And again, DeRozan similar to Jimmy Butler, even though I think Butler's a better player than DeRozan. All-star, very good player. Professional. The professional is professional as far as, you know, a guy who's going to bring it every night, but is not worthy of receiving that kind of treatment. Jimmy Butler is a guy who maybe could be your second best player on a team that can win a championship. Maybe. More than likely you would like to have him as your third. I remember Jimmy Butler in 2017 playoffs had a chance to definitively show that he's a franchise caliber player. He wet the bed after Rondo got injured, and Boston just ran away with that series. Won 4 straight games, and it was clear who was the straw that stirred the drink, and that was Rajon Rondo in that particular series, not Jimmy Butler. Last year, Jimmy Butler in the playoffs averaged just under 16 points a game. Okay, so again, Jimmy Butler is a very good player. I would say a legit top 15 player. Jimmy Butler is not worthy of a meeting in September about what exactly, like, what are we talking about? If I'm the Minnesota Brass and Jimmy Butler, because it's not shot selection. It's not shots. What exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about you working on your shot to become a more consistent jump shooter? Because feel free. You have that option of becoming a more consistent jump shooter. Are we talking about you becoming a better leader for the younger players? Towns and Andrew Wiggins? Like, what exactly is this conversation going to be about? Because we get it. If it goes south, we will move you. Like, we'll trade you. So we're both on the same page from that standpoint. You and the organization. So that's not what we should be meaning about. But the fact that you want to be traded, or when you want to be traded, we'll move you if this thing goes south. But other than that, you're under contract. You will be an outright free agent in 2019. What are we talking about here? What is this conversation going to look like? We're not getting your input on coaching or philosophy, basketball philosophy. That's when power can go wrong. It can go wrong quick with how much power the NBA players have right now. Especially the all-star caliber players, the players who are all-stars. That is going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. We'll be coming back shortly later in the week with another podcast. I will not wait nowhere near as long to come back at you with another podcast. We'll talk some, talk a couple of things that I have on the table that I have put on the shelf that I'll discuss. Remember, this is the Real Deal Podcast. Telling it like it is with no apologies. I'm out.